Hello, my name is Luca, and welcome back to another episode of Sport Within the Mind podcast, where we take a deeper dive into the mental challenges faced within sport to another level. Joining us on today's episode is professional deaf football player for England, Henry Bowe. He has performed for England on an international basis in the most recent 2024 European Deaf Championships in Turkey. We will be discussing the impact sport has had on the athlete, hearing about his disability and the opportunities and challenges he's faced within a sporting environment. Thanks for taking your time out of your busy schedule to talk to us today, Henry. How are you doing?
Doing very well, thank you. It's an honour to be on this episode, and I'm looking forward to having a little chat with you.
Yeah, brilliant. Just for the viewers that may not know, would you be able to kind of just talk about your disability?
Yeah, so I'm profoundly deaf, so I play deaf football. So on a football pitch, it's the same format as a normal 11-a-side pitch, except everyone in the team has to take their hearing aids out or implant, whatever that's give us an advantage to hear. So everyone's got 11 playing field, and the referee's got like a flag to line, otherwise couldn't be able to hear the whistles blowing. That's the only difference, really.
So for people that may not know, do you have like an implant? Is that correct?
Yeah, I wear a cochlear implant, yeah.
And what does how does that work?
So I had an operation when I was 11. So it's like a magnet that did installed into my head. And it's magnetic, as you can see. So once it's on, it's almost like a light switch. Almost once it's connected, it's on and I can hear. But I don't know how much I can hear in comparison to hearing peers and stuff. But I can hear quite well. And obviously without it, I hear absolutely nothing. So a lot of the time on a football pitch and stuff, I'm using my eyes and my body language and gestures and stuff to communicate.
Yeah. So like growing up, so you said you had that operation at 11. So growing up before then, how hard was it? Like, because I'm guessing you played football from quite young. How hard was it actually before you had the implant, or how did you cope? Was it sign language? What was the terminology around that?
Yeah. So I was born severely deaf. So I could hear a little bit, but nothing really in comparison. But I wore hearing aids up until the age of 11 and my hearing got worse. So obviously I went to audiologists and they were like, to my parents, your son's hearing has gotten worse. Like practically it gets to the point where hearing aids are not really much use. It doesn't really benefit me anymore. So it doesn't really help much. But in terms of a football pitch, it didn't really change too much because like on a football pitch, I've always been like a visual player. Like I always rely on my eyes and my other senses apart from my hearings and stuff because it doesn't really help me much. So I guess obviously when I'm playing with the deaf people and stuff, I do use sign language and stuff to communicate, but it's difficult to do it while we're in play. So we tend to throw in some sign when like, the balls are off or throwing, or the manager's trying to throw in the touchline when the goalkeeper's taking goal kick. For example, there's little breaks in the game. That's when you can throw little messages. But there's been time when, obviously, if the player's not looking at you, they're looking at elsewhere. So we have to try and wait to get their attention. And sometimes it's just can't really get past the information over. It's a little bit difficult. So it's a bit more of an element of trust. So we need to trust that player to know what to do. We can't really communicate as much.
Yeah. How impactful was that? Was that implant for like, I know before you joined the deaf football teams, you were maybe in a normal team with other players that weren't deaf. So was it hard to then communicate with them?
I think on the pitch, yeah. It's difficult to, if I join a new team and stuff, like I can speak, I'm wearing my implant. Yeah. When I'm training, I tend to wear it because it's not as intense and stuff. Like, it's not much contact. When it's an actual game, I tend to take you up just to be safe because when I head of the ball, it might fall off and stuff. So I'd rather just for my own peace of mind to take it off. Also, when I'm playing deaf football, I have it off anyway. So I thought it's just good to have practice. But I think it's more, I'm used to it by now, but I think it's more for my teammates and stuff who are not familiar with me. They might be like shouting for my name. Obviously, they would do it for other teammates. But they wouldn't realise it's pointless. Like, it was just over my head for me to hear. So I think I try and communicate. So I think growing up, I've always been a little bit nervous about telling them, like, a bit anxious, like, saying, oh, like, I'm deaf, by the way, when I take it off, or, I mean, missing information and stuff, I tend to keep it quiet. Obviously, it does kind of pay off a bit, because sometimes there's been a couple of instances where the manager or even players will come to me and said, you can't hear me, what's going on? I'm like, oh, yeah, sorry. I can't hear. It's like it's a bit of communication. I think it should be done from both parties. But obviously, when I'm gotten older now, I'm confident just to say, you know what, I'm hearing, I'm deaf. Like I won't be able to hear when I take it off. Just use your hands and gesture and stuff. And they've been quite understanding. But I think it's just a matter of playing with me on a regular basis, and they'll understand what I could do and what is an easier way to communicate with me.
Yeah, so I found that, like, I saw that when you started playing football from young age, you were at Derby, JJB Trusts, and then you ended up getting scouted by Nottingham Forest. Was that in the academy?
Yeah, so when you're at a young age, they have this little bridge where I was too young to be in the academy. I was 8, and they have like a 7 or 8. Well, it's different academy of different formats, but I think at the time, Nottingham Forest had a little bit of a year in preparation before introducing them to an academy. So around that time, my parents, my mum in particular, used to come onto the pitch next to the coaches and sign for me just to interpret
Oh,
what the
okay.
coaches were saying. So that was a big part of that my growing up and stuff like having my parents coming over to interpret for me, or if the coaches are deaf aware, they'll kind of like sit, they make me sit in the front of like that group and stuff when they're like demonstrating the drills and stuff. They'll try and like double check with me when they send everyone off. It's like, do you understand what you're doing and stuff like, oh yeah, obviously being young.
Yeah.
And I tend to like stand behind that the player who's in front doing the drills or a couple of players just so I can see what they're doing, and I try and replicate
To talk about maybe just a little bit outside of sport, did you ever potentially struggle to form relationships because of your disability in any way, or did it never affect you in any way at all?
in a different environment, maybe new environments, new surroundings. I've grown up, I was a little bit like more reserved because I still want to make myself out there, and I'll wait until I build that relationship with one person or two person, and then my confidence kind of grow from there. But now I'm getting older, I'm like, I didn't really care what other people think. Obviously, people will judge me, like on initial reaction, like, or they can see I wear an implant, or but I think nowadays with society awareness and stuff like, it's kind of the norm to see deaf people walking the street and stuff and see them signing. So I think people are not really too bothered by it, and I think most people like tend to be like, wow, you speak very well for like a deaf person. I'm like, oh, thank you. And then I kind of just go on from there. Like, they ask me a couple of questions about it, and I tell them a couple of things and stuff. So I think it's not really too much of an issue nowadays. But growing up, it's definitely it's just a case of being confident in myself, I guess. But it kind of got to the point where I didn't really care what other people think. I just do me, basically.
When you were kind of at Forest as well during them teenage years, did you ever experience like getting judged in any way, or did that ever affect your like performance?
Yeah. No, not really, I guess. But if anything, if I was being judged, it was I didn't catch any of it. I probably didn't hear it.
Yeah.
But again, that kind of plays into point, I guess. Like, if I don't hear it's not on my mind. I don't really care, essentially. But no, not really. Could the couple of the coaches that were there at the Derby, I kind of knew them outside from football as well, and I've done a couple of like football camp away from that, the Derby format, the setup. So he knew like
Yeah.
my needs and like how to communicate with me quite easily. But I was there for about 2 or 3 years, and then it just didn't work materialize at the end. And it's just, I think not just me, like hearing other stories in the like in the England deaf setup, like teammates, they've gone through similar situations. Like growing up, they've been good enough to be in academy football, but they've never really been introduced in because communication barriers and the coaches think this is not going to work when they get older. So it's like it's a bit of a waste of an investment, I guess, because they had to invest the time into players. But they're obviously looking at the future, like kind of 16, 17-year-old play who are deaf. Like, obviously, there'd be a lot of, because they rely on communication from the managers, from this touch line, and from the teammates and stuff. Like, as I've gone older, I've realised that communication is one of the key skills in football. And obviously, this isn't an issue for me and for the deaf players, but I'm very happy to find that another way around to get to the highest level I could possibly do.
Yeah, I think that's why it was just so key to understand, like, because obviously communication is huge. But obviously, when you started, how different was it when you started to join an actual whole non-deaf football team?
I think I've always been like playing 5-a-side and stuff because I used to go to deaf schools. They used to have like tournaments and stuff. So I'm quite lucky because some of my deaf mates haven't had that childhood. They kind of joined into deaf football quite late age, and they didn't realise there's a whole world of football out there for deaf people.
Yeah.
They're like, oh my God, they regret missing that opportunity. But for me, I've been quite lucky. So I've had that connection. So I've always played deaf football alongside with hearing football growing up. But when it gets to the age when I'm like more into the, obviously the international setup with England and stuff,
yeah.
I've always been around these people, so I knew them. But it's really lucky, you know. It's different. The level of football is different as well. Like with deaf football, I play like deaf football league and stuff in England, and because obviously we have a smaller group of like cohorts of deaf footballers, and then obviously comparing to the just a very small percentage. So you think deaf people in out of the hearing population are quite small. So if those players who play football are even smaller, and those players who are good enough for England are even smaller. So like the level of football, deaf football is very, it varies.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like there was actually a lot of awareness when you were growing up, and obviously now.
Yeah, it was quite good.
Great, so that's really great to hear. Was there, moving on to like the challenges and opportunities, would you say there was then a lot of, I know for you there was a lot of opportunities, but would you say in general, like just in like for disability sports, would you say there's a lot of opportunities when you were growing up? Or
no, there was definitely not enough opportunities when I was growing up. Like I was lucky to be at the place I was at, so that able to give me some opportunities and stuff. Being around in deaf schools, I grew up in deaf schools and stuff, so that helps. For those people who grew up in mainstream schools, could I eventually move on to mainstream school, but I still had that connection from that previous schools and stuff, so that definitely helped me. But I think nowadays the opportunities definitely done a lot better, because I've seen that we call it the power football. That's the setup I play under in England, and they have a lot of ambition. They've got a lot of plans for the future, and it's really good now. They've got more programs for young kids. Like when I first joined, they have regional talent emergency camps, where they have regionals. So I was around East Midlands. This is where they scout players from like the north, south, and stuff. And we obviously compete in little tournaments at the end of the year. Then we get scouted from that. There's like a whole process through it. And then they call it RETP, Regional Emergency Talent Programme. And then you've got National Talent Programme, NETP. So they recruit those players with potential to get into the England squad. So I was on that programme for 3 years. So you've got scouts that have like a talent ID day, which is the same for like Paralympics. So they have these bad days when obviously they sent out all the advertisement and stuff, and then obviously players will sign up for it. So they'll come and they were like, see, oh yeah, you're good enough. They'll provide them opportunities for them within the clubs around there where they live and stuff. So there's a lot more awareness now, and then we've got more programs and structure like to guide young deaf footballers all the way up to the first team now.
Yeah, I mean that's brilliant. Yeah, it's definitely improving. I mean, I've seen on your Instagram many a times the World Championships. We'll get onto that in a bit. Just talking about some of the other challenges, I've seen from my research that the Disability and Health Promotion found that adults with disabilities report experiencing frequent mental distresses almost five times as often with adults without disabilities. Have you ever struggled mentally, or has kind of sport actually acted as a positive impact on your mental health?
I say sports definitely acts as a massive positive for my mental health. I think without sports, I think I can see why I could fall back into that little zone where it's just struggling. I think, because I was looking at like my brother as an example, obviously he's hearing stuff, but
yeah.
I'm really happy that sports could provide me so many opportunities and so many networks and friends as well. Like,
yeah.
I've got friends all over the country, so I'm able to.
Would you say a lot of your friends are from like being in sport?
Yeah, essentially, you get a lot of friends. Like, there's a lot of benefit being playing our football. And in sports, essentially, you meet people, you meet friends and stuff. Like, I've managed to travel around the world, around Europe, and I wouldn't have got that without sports, without football. So I think it's definitely made a massive impact on me, and it basically informed my whole identity. I think without it, I definitely would have been a completely different person.
I've kind of seen from the previous episode, I had a sports psychologist, Robert Copeland, was on one of their episodes, and he said that self-confidence can really help, sport can kind of help with your self-confidence. And has that happened with you?
definitely helped me being confident in my body image. Essentially, could obviously I'm in a good shape and stuff. So it definitely helped. I've got a couple of mates and stuff. They're a bit insecure about their body and stuff. So obviously, being sort of constantly exercising, but it's also given me like a structure, obviously like a routine that I know I'm gonna eat, sleep, train, etc. So it's given me that. Give me like key skills that I can use to apply to myself. Obviously, that boosts my self-confidence, and also meeting new people, meeting friends. And you know, if you know you're good at something, you're going to naturally be quite confident about it. And then that's going to like give off to other people, and then just immediately have that good initial interaction. And I think definitely it's definitely made a big impact.
You've been obviously involved with England football, and that's a huge organization. Do they actually provide within the camps and stuff, like someone in case you're mentally not feeling well, or if you're away or anything like that? Do they provide maybe like a player carer or a psychologist in that region?
Yeah, they definitely do. You've got like a massive multidisciplinary team. So you've got like doctors and physios and obviously coaches and stuff like that. We've got interpreters. So there's always loads of staff, and then obviously certain staff you might have a close relationship with, so obviously you can feel to disclose any information with them, etc. But like every camp, you always do a medical check with the doctors and physio, where you call out the players 1v1. They'll ask how you're feeling, any like allergies, medications, anything's changed since we last saw you, is any new injuries, any like reoccurring injuries. So they're very good at like keeping tap on it, and if you ever get injured or need support, it happens in the camp, they will immediately provide you private care. But off, away from camp, it's where it's a little bit difficult. They still provide you support, but because you may get injured or something's happened away from the camp, they're still there to help you and support you. They've definitely done a lot better nowadays. But we had to raise concern about it. They definitely act on it. Because before, we used to if you get injured in playing for a hearing club and stuff,
yeah.
Obviously, you're still under England, and because you're injured, you can't perform your duty. Like you're unavailable for camps and stuff. So they have a different structure to go through to get the support you need. But they've definitely done a lot better nowadays, and they're offering more bursaries. And if you're still in education with uni, they will recommend you to like sports government bodies, like talented athlete scholarship scheme, which I was on for 3 years while I was at uni. So that provided me support to private healthcare, a bit of bursaries and access to like the top facilities at uni and stuff, and support from them. So they're able to support me away from camps as well as in. But obviously with the structure, like us as an athlete, we don't get paid, unfortunately. So we still have to do other jobs. We have to do other jobs alongside with it. So obviously that will put a lot more stress and mentals out, but they always have that support in store for us.
Yeah, I think that's quite important, especially when if you're not getting paid and you're going on these big European tournaments and you're going away with the team. And I'm guessing England essentially pay for all of the stuff when you're going there.
Everything's paid for. Just need to bring yourself over, but you potentially could lose money.
Yeah, when you're there for a while as well, you're going to want to, I'm guessing you've toured around a bit whilst you're there as well. So obviously, I think when you go through if you go through something mentally like that and you're away with the team, it does seem very important to have that kind of support. I'm just going to move on to pressure and kind of social media. Obviously, this is moving on towards your career now with England. I'm guessing there was obviously more media coverage and attention. What were the biggest pressures kind of like now you're competing at the top?
The coaches don't really want to have the word pressure installed into my head. But obviously, you have that natural pressure of you want to do well for the country, essentially. That's the first thing. But obviously, you want to do well for your friends and family, because they know how much work you put in, how much sacrifice you have to put in, and you almost want it to pay off. You don't want it to throw into your face. But I didn't really tend to try and feel too much pressure. But obviously they do psychology sessions and stuff to help us, so we can cope with pressure and how we can deal with it, and how we can they always said to us, which I've always taken on board, expect the unexpected.
Yeah.
So that's a really thing that I've always taken on board, and I try not to put too much pressure on it. Could essentially, when you're on the pitch, it's just you with a ball working as a team to try and score goals and win a game, essentially. So when you simplified it like that, it's nothing more stressful than that, is it? It's very simple. It's quite straightforward. So I kind of I think I'm quite good at like dealing pressure myself. I've seen that a couple of my teammates and stuff, they struggle with the occasion. The occasion gets better at them.
Yeah.
But obviously the manager are quite aware of that, and we try and like try and make the time away from the pitches. Obviously when you're in the hotels and stuff, we'll try and make it quite relaxing and calming as possible, so we like have time to recover, relax, play games, like play on Xbox and PlayStation, etc. So we're able to prepare ourselves for the upcoming
Just
games.
you just say like distracting yourself almost sometimes while you're away, and in such a big occasion, it's kind of like how you mentally prepare for them matches.
Yeah, and obviously we have like tactical session and stuff where we'll prepare players about formation, what to expect from us, and set pieces and stuff. So we have a lot of preparation in place to try and help reduce that the pressure that you feel and like, to make us feel more prepared. So I think pressure like is almost innated from players. Like they'll try their best to try and reduce the external pressure that can be exposed onto us, like tactical preparations, like physical preparation. They will do all these things to try and help reduce it so we can be feel more prepared. So hopefully that will then reduce the pressure that you feel going into the game.
Yeah, I think that is quite important, so you can kind of perform to your best. To talk about pressure even further, I mean, the media is obviously taking over, and I think actually, like you said, it disabled sport is growing now. I've seen, I saw one of your games in the competition recently in the 2024 in Turkey. Have you ever actually received, or you or your teammates received, any like hate from the media or any backlash from the media? And has that affected anyone in the squad?
With good publicity will come with bad publicity as well, and you will receive some backlash. But obviously, I think it's not really the media directly that said bad things, because they want to protect their image. So they've always said good things, but it's just people's reactions and people make comments under certain posts and stuff like that. They obviously they mock about that deaf football. They probably throw little jokes and stuff. Some of them I find quite funny, because obviously they're not, I don't think they aim at us. They just there's a bit of banter in their eyes. They're taking a bit of a joke. But some of them do get a little bit too far. And there's obviously with there was one instance with Farsi Celtic where we absolutely smashed the other team 36-0 with 9 players. Obviously, that shows that the difference in deaf standard football, like Farsi being one of the best team, and Hall Park Rangers is another deaf team, but they were newly formed. They only had 11 players, but they were new. They're trying to do it. Obviously, we absolutely smashed them. Obviously, we posted that on Twitter, and obviously people were commenting like mind blown, like 36-0 is a bit of a ridiculous score.
Yeah.
But some of the comments they were saying were a little bit harsh, and obviously we didn't mean to disrespect the other team, but like they were throwing some comments and stuff. And one of our assistant manager, he's hearing, but he's coder, so he's a child of deaf adults, so he's been around with deaf families and stuff like deaf people growing up. So he's quite close to him. And he was like commenting saying like jokingly saying like there's a fine for you, there's a fine for you, like, and it almost grew on like a line, like there's always gonna be people out there who made mock-ups, but I think we kind of got thicker skin from it from growing up. We always have people like away from football have like a certain ideas, or they have a certain perspective on us. They'll judge us before they knew us, they know us.
Within the media these days, it is quite a big thing. But do you actually think that the media more positively affects it rather than negatively? Because based off what you said, you're kind of used to it, so it doesn't, all the negative hate, if anything, it kind of overrides it, the positive.
Definitely. Definitely, yeah. I'll say there's a lot more positive to take from the like the media coverage than negative. So obviously we want more. Obviously it may come with more backlash and stuff, but it comes a lot more positives, and positive outweighs the negatives. So of course we'll welcome any more.
Yeah, the only thing I was going to ask as well, because I've seen you did something on the England Instagram. You'd kind of given.
Yeah, I did like the BSL awareness thing where there were some goals,
Go
some
through that.
signs. Yeah, so I got asked to come to the St George's Park. It was a really nice experience. And so it's basically just to spread awareness. I think we're working with EE, but they're quite good with it. They've done some work with some of our players and stuff. So it was just a matter of like different phrases used in football, like goal, manager and stuff. I was just signing. But it's obviously that spread awareness for the players who want to know a bit more about deaf football, want to know a bit more about the signs. I think it was good from both sides of the point. So I welcome any more of those like awareness things that be spreading out. I think it'd be really good to have more collaboration than working with like deaf footballers and within Lundanee, and the fact they posted it on their main Instagram page, I thought was really rewarding. It was quite nice to have that little bit of fame moment almost.
I think that media attention just that is just a prime example of like how the media can actually like help grow disabled sport and deaf football and things like that. So it's just really good. And anyone who's maybe watching and doesn't actually understand how hard it might be to like play football and not be able to like speak to your teammates in any way, or it's just that was really brilliant to see. Just moving on to the last point, is there maybe any advice for someone who's maybe looking for a career in disabled sport, and you ever get any advice for them?
You can do it almost like some of those people out there probably thinking they're scared about the reaction they may get from it and stuff, but nowadays with today's societies and like everyone's more aware and more like open-minded. Yeah. And I think it's definitely now's the time to do it. Like I've gained so much from it. It forms who I am. It added mastery to my identity. It gave me like timeless experiences, and like I'm gonna obviously hold on to me for the rest of my life. It's given me opportunities that I didn't thought I would have. It's given me like lifelong friends that I will always have, and it's amazing experience. I think obviously if you're scared about doing things, just take that first step, just make that initial contact, and you'll be surprised out there. Like us disabled people, we want to support one another, so we are very friendly and we want to help each other. We want to see each other succeed, because essentially we all are working together to prove people wrong, to prove that what we can do, like there's so much potential and so much that we can do that other people may not believe that we can do, but we can do it.
Yeah, I mean, you should be able to do what you love, and if there's anything holding you back, such as a disability, that you've clearly told us today of why there's so much support out there to help you. And I think now's better time than ever to just
impact
on it, really.
Definitely.
Well, I think that's all we have time for. Thanks for taking your time out your day today, Henry. Hope to see you lifting that European Championship trophy at some point, or the World Deaf Football Championship trophy at some point.
I hope so. There is a major competition coming up called Deaf Olympics. So obviously you've got the Olympics, you've got Paralympics, you've got Deaf Olympics. So obviously you're probably thinking, why are we not merging some of the Deaf Olympics to Para? Basically, I spoke to one of the head coach, one of the head sports organizer. So basically, in Olympics, you have like a certain amount of events and stuff.
Yes.
So in Deaf Olympic, let's say we've got about 15, 16 different events. Obviously, we spoke to like the chair of Paralympics a while ago, like, because they were saying, why do we merge it? Because we are under like the Para, but we don't look at it, we don't, us deaf people, that's the thing with us, we're quite, we don't, some of us, a lot of us don't consider deaf as a disability. It's just who we are, it's an identity. So that basically, interesting facts for you, Deaf Olympic was created before Paralympics.
Oh, okay.
So Paralympics said to them, what, we can have some of your deaf events and stuff, but we can only have seven. That's what they said. So I think we had about 15, 16. So how can we select which event to do into Paralympics? Like, how can we disregard other events? Because if essentially all events are just as important as each other. So that's why we scrapped the idea of like merging into it, because they have a certain slot. So we just decided to sit with our own Deaf Olympics and the next Deaf Olympics in Tokyo in 2025. And essentially for many deaf players, footballers, tennis player, essentially, that is the biggest event.
Yeah, and hopefully that can actually bring in more people to kind of come out and play sport.
Definitely. I think the issue with like Deaf Olympics compared to like with World Cup and European Championship, we're very lucky to have the backing and the support from the FA funding. But because of the Deaf Olympic, we are under the Great Britain name, so it's different compared to England. So we actually don't have that many backings. We have to rely more on sponsorships, like endorsements and stuff.
Yeah.
So we had to, each player had to raise money to go, essentially.
Yeah. Well, it's brilliant to hear the impact that disability sport has made over the recent times, and it's great to hear your experiences with England and stuff like that. So really appreciate your time, Emery.
No problem. Thank you for having me.
That's all we have time for today's episode from the England International. Thanks for watching Sport Within the Mind podcast.
Coming up on the next episode is an ex-professional athlete's input of the mental health challenges faced from well over 30 years ago, in which this athlete performed at the Olympics for Great Britain. But until then, it's bye for now.